and thanks for joining us for another episode of LID Radio Podcast. I'm your host for today, Francesca Stainer. And for this episode, we're talking to Alan Williams about his book, The Values Economy, How to Deliver Purpose-Driven Service-Sustained Performance. Now, Alan Williams coaches progressive leaders of service sector organisations internationally and in the UK. He is a published author and speaker whose products have delivered measurable business results across the Balance scorecard and been recognised with industry awards. His latest book, The Values Economy, is co-authored with Samuel Williams as well. So about the book, the exponential rate of change and disruption in the world means that traditional organisation structure-led approach is no longer fit for purpose. In the book, the authors explain how the three primary influences of choice, communication, and control have created a new paradigm that they refer to as the values economy. Leaders of organisations can survive and thrive in this brave new world by implementing a tried and tested, detailed methodology which can be applied in any setting and industry. The core principle is alignment, with a specific focus on the areas of brand identity, employee engagement, and customer experience. This helps to establish a sense of shared values with all stakeholders and equips the organisation with the agility needed to deliver sustained performance in a dynamic business environment where disruption is the new normal. The authors combined baby boomer and Gen Z perspectives provide a compelling and irresistible blend of sharp insight, operational know-how and pragmatic hopefulness, bringing the theory to life with a range of case studies from different sectors, sizes and stages of maturity. So today we're talking to Alan Williams about why organisations need to disrupt from the inside. So now over to Alan.
The Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau said, "The pace of change will never be this slow again," when he was describing the rate of change that is happening in the world. To put this into practical perspective, Uber was tested in New York in early 2010 using only three cars. And the official launch took place in San Francisco in May that year. By 2020, Uber had 4 million Uber drivers operating in 400 cities for 75 million riders with annual revenues of $4.1 billion and a market capitalization higher than Ford Motor Company and General Motors. And if this exponential acceleration is not already enough of a challenge, there is another influencing factor to contend with: disruption. This is why William Pollard's words have never been more relevant when he said, "The arrogance of success is to think that what you did yesterday will be sufficient for tomorrow." When you're thinking about the topic of disruption, just take a moment to consider what seems like a technology-obsessed view. It might be true that new technology uproots and eventually replaces an existing technology. So, for instance, video streaming replacing video rentals. However, this description misses the point because disruption is not driven by technology per se. Instead, it is driven by customers. They are the ones behind the decisions to adopt or reject new technologies or new products and services. Using Uber again, customers valued the convenience and value of the Uber service, and the driver community valued the flexibility of hours and the service delivery model. For this reason, large companies should focus on changing customer needs and wants to respond more effectively to digital disruption. Taking a bigger picture view, we face a future of colliding megatrends, from rapid urbanization to climate change and resource scarcity, to technological breakthroughs, to shifts in economic global power, all against a backdrop of demographic and social change. We know that these shifts are reshaping societies, economies, and behavioral norms across the world, and redefining whole industries at a breathtaking pace. We also know that technology is a game changer. At the same time, business leaders cannot be sure how they should be planning for what's to come. The past is no longer a reasonable guide to the future, and there is so much hype, so many unknowns, and such a degree of volatility in every dimension. Research shows that the pace of change and related threats from business model disruption has become the top emerging risk for CEOs. The notion of an organization with a fixed structure and supply chain offering a well-defined range of products or services in a stable market with a set of known competitors is disappearing fast. Now and in the future, organizations should create their next cutting edge by embracing new technologies to develop potentially disruptive ideas in and outside of their current industry. They should also fund their future bets by progressively bolstering and allocating their innovation investments to test and turn new ideas into commercial realities faster. And if organizations cannot build or fund the necessary skills and resources internally, they should find partners, including third parties and suppliers, to scale new ideas and provide access to technologies and specialized talent. They should also disrupt from the inside by fostering an internal culture that views innovation as a benefit and establishing an innovation lab or digital factory to test new ideas. It is also likely that we will increasingly see the development of collaborative ecosystems replacing the traditional organization concept. When we are considering this broader perspective of disruption, how could we fail to reference COVID-19, the most profound disruption to lifestyles since the Second World War? The shock to the global economy from the pandemic has been faster and more severe than the 2008 global financial crisis and even the Great Depression. These previous episodes saw stock markets collapse by 50% or more, but all of this took around 3 years to happen, whereas in the current crisis, similar dire macroeconomic and financial outcomes materialized in just a matter of weeks. The pandemic has claimed nearly 4 million lives, bringing health services all over the world to the brink of collapse and placing more than a third of the world's population on lockdown to stop the spread of the disease. Global stock markets crashed around about 30% in a matter of months in 2020. Stock markets made volatile swings, mainly due to extreme uncertainty in the markets. Governments have provided various packages of financial support for businesses and individuals. Unprecedented has become an overused word. At a societal level, the measures imposed to respond to the pandemic have fundamentally affected how people live, work, socialize, and care for one another. At a societal level, The measures imposed to respond to the pandemic have fundamentally affected how people live, work, socialize, and care for one another. We've witnessed the best and worst of behaviors driven by elevated concerns for safety and economic security in tandem with enhanced personal connections and empathy. On the one hand, we saw the hoarding of hand sanitizer and toilet rolls and selfish behavior regarding social distancing and mask wearing. On the other hand, individuals and communities have demonstrated that the worst situations tend to bring out the best in people and organizations. From the frontline health service and care workers putting their lives at risk with inadequate personal protective equipment, to local volunteers to drive or deliver food supplies for neighbors. Captain Sir Thomas More was a former British Army officer and centenarian, known for his achievements raising nearly £33 million for the sake of the nurses and the NHS. There are signs that the impact of COVID-19 might result in fundamental, long-lasting change. Unscaling is causing the rapid reinvention of industries such as healthcare, education, and manufacturing, and an historical shift in the way we work. Think of learning happening anywhere at any time, rather than in one place at set times. Or how 3D printing can overcome the challenge of mass production in a single location, with an expensive and complicated logistics infrastructure. In the workplace, future possibilities could also lead to a spike in suburbanization and counter-urbanization and impact the use of public transport. In summary, COVID-19 has demonstrated how we are less constrained by time, geography, and built environments than we had appreciated. At a sociological level, a global values assessment indicates that at a personal level, there has been a strong shift towards making a difference, adaptability, well-being, and caring. In workplaces, the traditional process focus of finance, control, and effectiveness has been replaced by a focus on people, agility, and communication. Health and well-being are generally viewed as more important than economic wealth. There are also early signs that consumers intend to reward more responsible retailers, particularly those who looked after their employees, and shop more on their local high streets and with smaller or independent retailers. This heightened awareness of what is important to us on an individual and collective level has had a knock-on impact on organizations. So let's explore some of the factors to consider under the three main headings of the service brand approach. Our observations cannot be conclusive in any way due to the evolving nature of the situation and the uncertainty at so many levels about what might or might not happen next. The vaccine rollout has gone well in parts of the world, less well in others. We don't yet know to what extent this will bring the pandemic under control and what a possible timeline could look like. We do not know how the economic recovery will unfold. We do not know how bad the impact of the pandemic will ultimately be on international relations, trade policy, and trade. The first heading of the service brand approach is brand identity. Marketing teams in all geographies, sectors, settings, and platforms have been challenged with the core issue that the coronavirus pandemic is one of the most globally disruptive phenomena of all time that no one can ignore. In these circumstances, continuing with usual marketing activities was not wise and understandably would have been likely to cause a backlash from various stakeholder groups. As a result, many brands have taken to communicating their stance during the pandemic with a swathe of well-intended values-led messaging. However, many of these messages are not landing well with the audience they're trying to reassure for several reasons. They're inward focused on the brand rather than focused on the real needs and concerns of the stakeholder. They're absent of any offer or helpful content. They do nothing to differentiate the brand from all the other brands who are saying the same thing. At best, these messages might be viewed as lacking in empathy or being disconnected from the core business. And at worst, they might be seen as opportunistic, disingenuous, and desperate. It's worth noting that this is not a new COVID-19 phenomenon. Whether it is a brand using the pride flag on their products for a month while not actually taking any constructive action to support the LGBTQ community, or the numerous examples of environmental greenwashing, brands have been behaving like this for some time. What is needed instead is demonstrable action showing that the organization puts into practice what they have always preached about their brand's purpose and values. A more appropriate and effective approach is for organizations to think pragmatically about how their brand values and purpose can authentically support the COVID-19 situation, no matter how big or small the deed, and then empower and encourage their stakeholders to spread the word. Take LVMH's response in March 2020, pledging to produce and deliver hand sanitizer to French health authorities and hospitals free of charge, and living up to this promise within 48 hours. Conversely, Virgin Atlantic required staff to take 8 weeks unpaid leave at some point over a three-month period, which feels at odds with their self-styled identity as the fun, friendly, fabulous choice that made travel attainable for everyone. To rub salt in the wound, company chairman Peter Norris called on the government to arrange an emergency bailout for the airlines of £7.5 billion to bolster confidence and prevent credit card processors withholding customer payments. If they had used the service brand framework, they might have handled this differently. As some form of normality returns, I believe that those brands who set aside opportunistic business gains and PR point scoring and instead focus their efforts on the common good will be remembered and rewarded by the people who built their brand in the first place. Of course, time will be the judge in this matter, and in no way do I think this is a foregone conclusion because our memories can be short-lived. Having said this, the emotions surfaced at this time are likely to be longer lasting. COVID-19 has heightened awareness of what is really important to people, touching a raw nerve. In the paradigm we refer to as the values economy, rhetoric no longer washes with customers, employees, service partners, and local communities, however good the intentions. Moving to the second heading of the service brand approach, employee engagement, well, COVID-19 has turned the world of work on its head, with an estimated 50% of employees working from home. Even as well-being has dropped to a 12-year low amid the outbreak, the engagement of the working population has hit a new high. Three drivers have contributed to these seemingly contradictory findings. First, in general, employees have been impressed at the care employers have shown for their employees' well-being, focusing on communication, preparing employees to work from home where relevant, and providing regular updates on developments. Secondly, the employment base is smaller, with millions of jobs lost, and there is some indication that these newly unemployed people were less engaged in their jobs. Thirdly, employees feel fortunate to have a job, and the efforts that their employer has made to equip them with the tools to do the job. Some companies made use of government funding to pay their employees 80% of their wage and also paid the additional 20% so they would not be out of pocket, even though many of them were not working. On the other hand, there have also been stories of employers abusing government funding schemes, pressurizing workers to return to work under the threat of future redundancy decisions, and trying to negotiate reduced terms and conditions. The negative impact on well-being has been driven by the blurred distinction between professional and personal life, longer hours, struggling to concentrate, feeling bored and less productive. These results suggest that whilst people may be working more hours at home, they're not necessarily delivering better work and may feel less efficient. A significant proportion of people admitted that working from home makes them feel more stressed. As the work from home phase is being followed by the return to work phase, the area of workplace is disproportionately important for an organization's brand reputation and employee engagement, and traditionally it has been underestimated or even overlooked. This return to work phase places the workplace and services provided firmly in the spotlight for senior leaders, delivery teams, and employees alike. Treatment of the physical space reflects the primary concern of health and safety, from social distancing protocols to cleaning regimes, from PPE to traffic flow management, and from temperature checks to reduced or limited services. At the same time, there is a risk that the focus on these elements can be all-consuming, with less, little, or even zero attention on making employees feel welcomed back to their place of work, establishing a new code of behavior, and supporting employees to be as productive as possible. What cannot be disputed is that the pandemic has clearly demonstrated that the office is no longer a de facto place to work for many. There are wide variations in the stance being taken on the future direction, with some large organizations urging an immediate return to offices to be with their communities, others targeting the end of 2021 before a meaningful return, and others committing to working from home as the new normal. And it's not just the more progressive tech-based organization that seem to be open to a new alternative. There are also indications that employees prefer to work from home, and signs of resentment from some towards their colleagues who continue to work from home, avoiding the time and cost of commuting. Some experts estimate that the pandemic-related working practices will reduce potential office capacity by more than 50%. And taking a broader end-to-end customer journey perspective for employees is also valuable, because a busy train journey from home to office with little chance of social distancing is just as important a consideration for an employee as the practices in their place of work. Finally, the pre-COVID-19 workplace model was arguably already outdated compared to our general dynamic business environment. So perhaps This is an opportunity to redefine how work is best organized, not just in a space dimension, office, home, or other space, but also in terms of geography, city or suburbs and towns, and time of the day. Just think, if offices are used Monday to Friday, 9 to 5, this foregoes over 75% of the capacity available. At another level, this is also an opportunity to redefine the fundamental basis of the employer-employee relationship to be more in keeping with the concept of organizational citizenship. Recent events might have increased the appetite and possibility of such a development, but could also be counterbalanced by the current and future increase in unemployment numbers and a resultant swing in power to employers. The third area of the service brand approach is the customer experience. The coronavirus situation has forced everybody to change in some way or another, whether they like it or not. So much of everyday routine has been disrupted, from the way people interact with others, to community movement patterns, to the way purchases are found and bought, to personal priorities. A key challenge organizations face is to understand what has changed for their customers, the behavioral impact this has had, and to what extent these changes will be short-term or longer-lasting. There is some evidence that customers are engaging with retailers differently and favor more responsible operators. There's been a backlash against some operators that tried to continue trading despite unaddressed safety concerns being raised by employees or in the media. A PwC survey found that more people, especially under 25s, are buying more from small companies and from brands who look after their employees, and even more people say they will do more of this in the future. I believe that the development we were already seeing in terms of decisions being made less on a rational and financial basis and more on a deeper emotional values level has been accentuated by recent events. Customers are even more focused on what the brand represents, what it offers, how they communicate with their customers, and what they really stand for. The organizations who are closest to their customers, not just in terms of data collection, but more in terms of genuine connection and more human, are best placed for success. In this age of Zoom and FaceTime, how crude and clumsy does a chat line feel? When you see the first positive customer comment about the organization next to the Buy Now button, does this feel like a contrived sales tool or a genuine part of the customer experience? The shift from face-to-face interactions towards omni-channel digital communications has accelerated, and it's no big surprise that Adobe, Microsoft, and Netflix have reported massive increases in demand for their products since the outbreak. Buying online rather than in shops might not signal the demise of the high street as we know it. However, physical shops can no longer be regarded as the primary channel, perhaps with an online service as a backup. Instead, customers expect a truly integrated cross-channel approach with Amazon-like digital tools, and they are just one click away from an alternative provider. Perhaps you can envisage a strange role reversal in the future, where physical stores might help to differentiate online brands from their competition. Nordstrom, the US retailer, is an example of an organization leading the way in this area. At a very practical level, COVID-19 has had a dramatic impact on a person-to-person customer experience. Service people and customers alike will be acutely aware of the need for professional, considerate practice of personal protection. Some businesses might also have one eye on potential litigation for negligence. This focus might dilute the concept of service to become more functional. Also, the smile is one of the most powerful techniques to foster emotional engagement, and we'll have to find alternatives to be used when masks are being worn. Pivoting quickly became one of the most popular business buzzwords, and with it came much hype and mystery. But simply, think of pivoting as a combination of offering new products or services, identifying new target markets, and using different channels to market. It could be one or all of these. Examples are a restaurant delivering takeaways, that's the channel. Hotels providing accommodation for NHS workers, that's the target market. And a brewery repurposing production facilities to produce hand sanitizer, that's the product and target market. It could be a short-term strategy or more long-lasting. And leaders can put in place three key foundations to give themselves the best chance of success in this environment. One is to adopt and develop a quite different mindset from the one that has served so well in the past. Future success will no longer be driven by knowledge about past performance, which is then applied in a detailed and well-executed plan to deliver incremental improvement. Instead, a mindset of possibility and continual adaption, innovation, and transformation will be more appropriate, alongside a willingness to work with ambiguity and operate in a messy business as usual. Two is about keeping the organization's purpose and values as a strong North Star, rather than become too attached to a current set of products, customers, or delivery model. I mentioned Nordstrom earlier. They've retained absolute focus on their purpose of improving customer service and their values, whilst at the same time not being confined to the upscale Nordstrom store setting. The third and final point relates to the concept of organization. The dictionary definition of organized is arranged according to a particular system and able to plan things carefully, keep things tidy, and work effectively. And yet the word organization can be traced back to the mid-15th century medieval Latin word organizationem, meaning act or process of organizing, the arranging of parts in an organic whole. Whilst development of organizations over time has tended to gravitate towards the dictionary definition with structures, functions, forecasting, and plans, I believe that this approach is no longer fit for purpose in such a dynamic world. Instead, organizations will be better served by the arranging of parts in an organic whole, with decisions made closer to the point of service delivery, and agility providing the ability to respond and react to developing or new situations. This spectrum of management evolution is described in Frederick Laloux's The Future of Management is Teal. There are some parallels with the service brand approach because the organization structure, for instance, is part of the systems and processes element. The whole organization is driven by the purpose and values. These sit in the brand identity section of the service brand approach. And there is a focus on delivering the customer experience by a one team of brand ambassadors. Measurement and insight provides the intelligence for future decisions. As the pandemic story continues to unfold, and we have already experienced, it's unpredictable. So it's going to be so fascinating to see how much of what I've talked about today materializes, to what extent, and for how long. Thank you.
Thank you to everyone who listened, and do remember to keep an eye on our social media at Lid Publishing on Facebook, Twitter and Instagram, and at Lid Business Media on LinkedIn. We'll be sharing more podcasts, books, blogs and expert opinions. So see you next time on Lid Radio Podcast.